Thank you. It's called Rich and Interoperable Services. Can we square the circle? Because we've been going round and around with this, trying to get this right from lots of different directions, both in LAMS and in the where I've been working more, which is in IMSLD. The context for the work that I'm going to talk to you now, and there's a lot of it, you know, so please feel free to interrupt me at some point if I'm rampaging through something. You say, what on earth is this application that we're looking at now? What's it for? There's not many of us, so please interrupt me. I've been working on a big European project called Ten Competence, coordinated by Rob Colpert of the UNL. And for those of you who don't know Rob was the architect of the Open University Educational Modelling Language, which then became IMSLD. So the project obviously had a big commitment to IMSLD. It's lasted for 4 years. Not all of that has been development time for the stuff you've been looking at, but it's been quite a big chunk. And it was looking at infrastructure for lifelong competence development. So runnable is important. Runnable is the starting point. So we're coming at it from very much the opposite end from compendium. But interesting how, you know, from listening to Gronje, actually there's quite a lot of common points there, even though we're coming from quite different ends. Open source, standards compliant, everything's available for download. And we've built a bunch of new tools for authoring and running and building the context for units of learning. More specifically, the stuff that I'm going to be talking about now is about how we're using widgets in the context of IMSLD and in other contexts to resolve the problem of services. IMSLD has extremely generic services. I could almost sort of underline that three times and put it in bold. I mean, the services are so generic as to hardly exist at all. Because of the problems of interoperability, which were raised by services at the time the specification was decided on. We make those services specific by adding a parameter to service which calls up a widget-based service. And so we resolve that problem by putting everything into our widget descriptions. The big gain, the big plus you get for this by using widgets is that you only have to do one integration for each platform, and that gives you access to a whole bunch of services which are being delivered through that widget platform. So Alex Little, those of you who remember Alex, who struggled with integrating into SLED services and had to redo that every time for each new service, what this offers you is that you do it once for our platform, and then everything that platform handles the channeling of those services into your platform. Integrating LD, IMSLD, was a very challenging scenario to start off with because it's got a whole bunch of extra problems which integrating services into other platforms wouldn't have. And so the result is that we've had a lot of rich spin-off for other platforms. The thing that we've made is called Wookie, and it's a widget engine. It's a server that sits in amongst all your other servers, next to LAMS, next to CopperCore, whatever, and it provides feeds of widgets. We provide a default set of widgets, and you can import more or build them. It's being seen as a reference implementation for the W3C widget specification, with a bunch of extensions which we've provided to enable the widget engine to provide forums and vote widgets and chat widgets, those interactive widgets which need the server to know who is who and how they're interacting. And now we can handle Google Wave gadgets as well. So that means that once you've integrated this one piece of one block into your application, you have access to all these things which you can configure. So here's a picture, an example of the relationship between Moodle and Wookiee. I mean, it's a very simple schematic picture, but there's Wookiee is handling all the processing for these different little applications. Over on the top left, you've got a fridge magnet poetry factory. Below, you've got a vote widget. And these are little views, if you like, onto the widget server. And in Moodle, for each block, you tell it, you make the integration is at the level of making Moodle able to show a Wookiee block. And then within that block, you say, I want this block to show the fridge magnet poetry. Or I want this block to show the vote mechanism. I want this block to show the Sudoku. And that's how it works. And so at the front level, the user, when they see it, just sees a page. They don't know. Here is Moodle running on the left two Apple desktop gadgets. There's a Phases of the Moon and a guitar chord gadget, which have been imported. And on the right, one of our interactive widgets. It's a chat widget called Matter, which you'll see appear in a number of different places. And there's the same gadget in WordPress. Now, integrating all this into WordPress or integrating it into Moodle is a fairly straightforward job. I haven't done it, but I've seen Scott do it in a day. So it's that kind of order of magnitude. It's not a big integration job. It's enabling the block to show. And here's a picture of the screenshot of the earlier one that I showed you. Now, these are Wave gadgets running in Moodle, and I'll just drop out of here. This is the page live on our demo server now. So what you've got here is these applications which you've seen, the fridge magnet, Sudoku, our vote widget, and the Natter, who's on here? Oh, look, it says Scott and Ernie G. That would be great to get it working in LAMS. Is Ernie here? Maybe he'd like to add something. This is live still. I don't know when that was. Well, there's been a bit of stuff. Okay, so you can see, I mean, you can go there, you can have a play if you just search for Wookiee Moodle. And we're looking to use this in our institutional system, for our institutional installation of Moodle, to free up some of the constrictions that we feel. It's not what the one I want. That wasn't what I wanted either. So we have then this generic mechanism for delivering services in a variety of different platforms. But learning design was the one that we really wanted to go for, because that's what we had to do for the project, as well as it being an interesting and environment to work with. So here's a picture of the some of those widgets which you've seen in other applications, the chat, the vote, and the forum, all running inside a unit of learning, which is being run by inside SLED, being run by CopperCore. That's a lot of stuff if you're not used to all these things. I'll say that again. Here are some services being provided inside a unit of learning. That'll do. Now, so what does that mean? The difference between running these services, these widgets, inside a unit of learning or running them inside, say, Moodle, is that you can do a whole lot more with these services. You can associate them with the roles which you defined in your unit of learning. You can say, I want group A to have access to this service. I want group B to have access to this other service. I want the teacher to be able to have a conversation with group B using this tool, but I don't want group A to know that they're having it. Whatever combination of different relationships that you want to establish, you can put that into the design of the learning, into the learning design. You can say, I want this forum to be used exclusively for this learning activity. And when I want them, when they move on to the next learning activity, I want them to have access to that forum. So that ability to target tools for specific groups of learners in specific learning activity contexts is one of the big things you get when you're working with learning design, IMS learning design, as opposed to doing this, say, in WordPress, where you throw up the widget, people have access to it. I think both those use cases are very valid. I don't think you need to do always to be looking at defining a complex flow of tools, but that's what you get when you do it with learning design. Here is just, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself there. When you add a widget to one of your learning designs, you query the widgets that query the place that you're going to be running the course. You query the server which is running at the place you're going to be running the course. Now, some of your ears will be twitching and you'll be saying interoperability here because you're now dependent on the specific services which are available in that place where you're going to be running the course. We do supply a set of default widgets, and there's also a mechanism so that if the chat widget that you particularly want is not available on that server, it will default to another chat service which is there. But clearly there's some kind of a compromise being made here between absolute interoperability and some practical solution which provides a rich set of services. And that's the way we've done it. As an author, you interrogate the server that you're going to be using, and they'll appear in the bottom of your palette of services and that you can use in what in IMS Learning Design is an environment. At the bottom, you can see the three of the default widgets appearing, and you can just drag them onto your learning design. Put them into a collection of learning objects and resources and associate them with an activity. And conceptually, that's all they need to do. There is a picture of an environment with some services in it. The only thing I would draw your attention to here is that you can see in the top right-hand one, chat for Team A only, and the bottom right-hand one, chat for Team B only. If you double-clicked on them, you'd get a little properties inspector, and you'd associate them, the roles, and you'd associate them in the activities. So that's where your association between the services and the people who are going to be using them becomes defined. Version 2 of Recourse has just been released. Phil Beauvoir, for those of you who know him, has been working very hard over the last months to get the new version out. If you download it, you'll see a bunch of new stuff, properties editor and conditions editor and level C, all that pending stuff which we had trying to get a good interface for defining what are quite complex structures of properties and conditions, allowing you to program all kinds of stuff into your learning design. And also the visualizer, which is a new thing. I'll just show you that briefly. Here's a unit of learning. It's got three stages, looking at the event, looking at the evidence. I've just opened this one pretty much at random. We've got a new tool, the visualizer here. What's happening there is that it's parsing the XML and putting up a representation of the unit of learning in a graphical format. And you can drill into it. And you can see that in this phase, the teacher is supporting the preparation stage and using these resources. This is the first version that fills. It's live. We can move it around. Let's just look at another one, just so you can see that it really is being. There's another one. It's parsing it. It's throwing it up. we're very interested to see how far we can take this kind of representation, and it's very interesting to me to see other representations of units of learning with, you know, lines and blobs, and to think about how that relates. We are looking to be able to parse the XML and then represent the conditional structures of level B. And I think that then it becomes, that becomes quite challenging but also interesting to be able to step through the unit of learning and see how the thing pans out over time. So watch this space. That's the over the next few months. I'm sure Phil will be putting out a lot of new things in that area. Oh, I keep forgetting to... how am I doing for time? 5 minutes to go. Oh, sorry. I'll try to run through. Okay, another big area of work that we're currently working on, some of you will know Paul Sharples, and others of you might possibly know Chris Poppat, are developing a new player, which will take the place of the venerable and much-loved SLED produced by the Open University here. It'll still use copper core, but it's designed with a widget look and feel in mind, and applies many of the lessons we've learned from taking SLED apart and putting it back together in over very many years. Just a few, these are running, it's the first version, it is running off copper core, but it's not really ready for testing yet, but it should be, you know, by the summer holidays. Logging on, you get a list of active runs you can choose from. And this is what you get, what you see. Now, again, I was, you know, this is, looks extremely close to what Gráinne was talking about in her number one scenario, whatever it was called. We call it a film strip. The user just scrolls through the activities. That is, we've got all the complex structure of the unit of learning is sitting behind there somewhere, and it may be that all kinds of properties and conditions are being applied to giving you one resource or another, but you step through the film strip to go through the activities. You can hover over an activity, and up comes a little rollover, a rollover information. This is one of the very, very first units of learning which we've often used as a test. So it's a very early unit of learning called Candidas. And when you double-click on activity, it'll open any content or tools related to the activity in a floating window. Because it's an old one, there are no tools. There weren't any tools to be delivered. The windows can resize, minimize, drag, etc. So you've got a little minimized strip for one of the windows there. You can hide the film strip. You can see up on the top right, the film strip's been hidden with the toggle button. And if you really want, you can go back to a tree structure if you want to know how everything is fitting together inside the tree. So we're providing that as well. So that the project ends in November. So this will be ready, I think, for sort of trialing and running and giving a go with in October, in September, late September. You should be able to get hold of this and work with it. So that's a bit of a gallop through the work that we've been doing. I just wanted to put some reflections in for why I think this is interesting. Firstly, widgets raise opportunities for investigating practice. VLEs obviously meet a need. I mean, they're ubiquitous, but they also constrict our conversations and learning. That really is me. Sorry about that. It hasn't been me all morning. It was turned off. Widgets can do for us is make the VLE transparent. When you look at that page of Moodle, suddenly everything that you see in that page, all the functionality is coming from somewhere else. And not only is the functionality come from somewhere else, if we looked at the... I'll just show you this, because this terrifies some people. This is some embed code here. Now, if you take that code, copy it, and stick it in your other page, you will get access to that widget. So not only can you you can rip the widget out of the place that you're where you find it and put it into somewhere else, in your home page, for example, and you'll still have the same conversation. So that raises lots of questions about privacy. I mean, only to the extent that everything is private, to the extent that people are willing to keep it private or not to make it private. But the limits of where those applications are and where they sit. So it really this kind of technology allows you to it allows you to make parts of your VLE very transparent and dissolve them, but in a selective way. So I think this makes it very interesting to look at the ways in which VLEs are used by teachers and institutions. We can suddenly start taking bits of functionality from there, putting them in, making that, shifting it around. Instead of having to deal with Blackboard as a thing, Moodle as a thing, compare them, we can actually start fine-tuning these things and do some interesting research on how they're used and why they're valued. We might have some surprises. We might find that it actually is the restrictions which make them attractive to people. I think that's part of it. Open up the VLE to remixing without the need for going into completely rewriting a new virtual personal learning environment. I'm moving on because I'm out of time. Then learning design as a predictive pattern. This is something that's been worrying me a lot. What makes it so hard and therefore interesting to achieve really good learning design rules, which is what Rob Cooper talks about, or pattern languages? We've been working on this for years, and we haven't really made a breakthrough. And I think there's a lot of issues here, which I'm just raising. We can talk about them maybe tonight. There's too many uncontrolled variables to deal with. There's a lot of stuff going on below the radar of the learning design, the teacher's style, the prior learning of the participants, the way that those dynamics of those communications may determine the degree to which that unit of learning is an effective learning experience or not. Whether, you know, as Martin was saying, whether that resource is cool for that group of learners. Or these things may be lost in the ozone, you know, way out of sight, you know, that in the Spanish and the UK national curricula, the way that they work and interact with the cultural traditions, which are kind of not within the scope of most of our discussions, are determining the outcomes. And there are many, many different views. From an Alexandrian point of view, Alexander's learning patterns, he talks about the quality without a name. And I often ask myself, what is the quality without a name for learning, for a unit of learning? What's the quality without a name here? And I don't think we have a really good answer. So those are my concerns about it. On the other hand, I think the kinds of flows that we define when we define learning designs are really interesting. And why are they interesting? Partly because they allow us to look at orchestration and the orchestration of complex patterns of use of tools is very interesting itself. But even more for me, they give us a context for discussing the kinds of decisive interactions which may or may not be captured by the learning design that I've just referred to as being below the radar. So I'm interested in positioning theory, for example, as a way of getting some leverage on that. How, within the context of a learning design, what are the teachers doing which makes it effective in one context and not in another context? What are the reasons why this learning design was effective in the OUNL but not in the Open University here? And for both these things, the services are key. What is to be orchestrated? The services are things that are challenging. The content's not difficult. And it's the medium through which the positioning is carried out, the interactions of the teacher and the learner and the learners between each other. Those are the critical things we need to look at. And this is my last slide, it's very, very quick. IMSLD is no longer the whole system. When we started off thinking about learning design, I think, and some of us were working on Unfold, another project, we had this kind of idea that everybody would be using learning design for everything. I don't think that's true. I think that just as Moodle is now we're using blocks of functionality, IMS learning design, complex learning flows are one of those blocks that you might go to. So you might be using Moodle. You might say, oh, yeah, I want an interesting learning flow. I'll jump into Astro, the new learning design player, for this activity. But for this other activity, I'll just throw up a forum and we'll discuss something. I'm out of time, aren't I, James? Okay, so I'll leave that slide out. If you're interested in any of this stuff, please stay in touch. If you want to know more about any of the applications I've been talking about, just write to me. Have a look at the 10 Competence website, but there's a warning that actually 10 Competence is much wider than what I've been talking about today. So please feel free also to mail me directly. The 10 Competence project's coming to an end. We have our final open workshop in Manchester, 19th to 20th of November. We just announced it. That will be an academic workshop as well as being an opportunity for demonstrating things. The proceedings will be edited by Rob Cooper and myself, and we'll be looking for a journal as well. So I would really encourage you, anybody who's interested, please submit a paper and come along. The conference will be either free or £50 for food. I mean, it's not going to be an expensive thing. So just come on up to Manchester, submit a paper, and maybe we can carry on some of these conversations in that context. Thanks very much. Have I completely...